Now, back to Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
8:06 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon on this Tuesday morning. I welcome back Michael R. Davidson to pick up our conversation from last Friday. MichaelRDavidson.com is his website. So, yes, Michael, I finally got my power back at home last Friday night, about 9:30 at night. The utility crew.
Okay.
Yeah, they did. They truly did an amazing job. I mean, we had a real mess in the area. I think there was, over 400 different outages at one point affecting 40,000 people in this central Hudson territory.
Thank heaven for that generator, eh?
Yeah, I ran 28 and a half hours.
Hear you.
I certainly am glad we did it. So in the nearly 3 years, I think that's my seventh power outage that we've had. So what a crazy world we're living in. And, of course, we had not what we were originally going to talk about, but the floods down in Texas. And the haters have to hate. It's Donald Trump's fault that he caused the climate change and made the river rise and cut the National Weather Service. And they didn't. Ugh. Michael.
It's insane, man. I mean, I just tune that stuff out anymore. These people are completely around the bend.
They absolutely are. But when I go back now, and I think I sent you an article here that we've learned, and this comes as no surprise. We go back to the end of the Obama administration, and it really does seem that Barack Obama himself, along with CIA Director John Brennan, FBI Director James Comey, DNI James Clapper, they absolutely were involved in orchestrating the Russia collusion hoax, which, if you stop and look at this, it really becomes the origin of so much of the hate that we see happening today.
Well, listen, I was talking to a Democrat the other day, a rare occurrence for me, who came into the cigar shop and we were enjoying smoke together. The guy still believes that stuff. And there's no way you could tell him, oh, wait a minute, have you checked your facts? They don't care about facts anymore. You know, I left the agency in the mid-1990s, and mainly I left because I detected that political correctness was creeping into the outfit and priorities were changing.
Yes.
And John Brennan, I think, is a good example of what happened. You know, Brennan wanted to be an ops officer, wanted to be a case officer, but he flunked a field training course.
Wow.
And decided to stay on as an analyst. And his entire career, in my estimation and the estimation of my colleagues, has been marked by a bias against operations people. He's been wrong, more than once. When he was chief of station Riyadh, which I don't understand putting analysts as chiefs of station, that's something that should never happen in the field. He incorrectly advised that Saddam Hussein was not going to attack Kuwait. And thank heaven Charlie Allen went to the National Security Council and told them otherwise. But it just goes on and on like that. I have a lot of friends who worked with all three of these characters that you just mentioned. And to a man, they have nothing good to say about Brennan. Michael Hayden, they note, my friend who's a former DIA officer, notes that he was a buffoon, basically. He knew nothing about what he was doing. He wrote a pretty good book, I think, but his activities belie any real rules of the game, I'd say. These people completely betrayed their trust. They all took an oath, and basically they betrayed that oath because of their ideology, and it's a damn shame. And frankly, I don't know whether any top-down revision in the agencies these days can succeed, given the depth of penetration of political correctness and leftist ideology in our institutions. So I'm a little bit in despair about it, and I'd like to see you know, they say there's a renewed emphasis on operations, on actually getting some human sources, which have always proven to be the best sources. And I hope they can do it, but I just don't know. I am really concerned about the intelligence community.
You and I have spoken for it's a little over a dozen years since we've had these conversations. But the point that you just made about the human intelligence, that's a conversation you and I have had for all of those dozen plus years about how critically important that is. And so many of the younger people that came in with their, you know, electronics and gee whiz technology stuff, you cannot replace that human intel. Michael?
No, and when you try to combine technology with human intel, you run into trouble. We lost entire networks of agents in Iran and China because of over-reliance on Yahoo technology for communications. It just, there's always a glitch. You know,
exactly.
If you can build it, someone else can deconstruct it. And it's a shame. I mean, I'll admit I'm prejudiced. I mean, I was an operations officer. I've laid dead drops. I've made brush passes. I've done all of those things. That was back in the day. It was another era, of course, before we had the kinds of technologies that we have today. But nevertheless, I would still say that a human source is what we need to be going after, and they're very, very difficult to obtain, to recruit. Sometimes it takes years. I mean, I had one guy defect to me who had simply observed me from afar in a previous assignment and decided he liked what he saw and defected. And he was a very important defector. But it was years after I'd had any contact with him whatsoever. So that's the way it goes.
Sure, sure. And again, you have to be open for that and, you know, at the same time be highly suspicious of it because it could be a plant the other way around. This is the real world that we're living in, and it just seems
that's why we call it a craft or an art. It's not a science.
No.
Intelligence work isn't. You have to have a certain kind of aptitude for it, and you have to eliminate people from the group who do not have that aptitude. And the people we're talking about now obviously did not have that aptitude or that appreciation for what they were supposed to be doing.
You know,
I'm sort of disgusted, I'll tell you, that while all of this going on, the other people who were under, say, Brennan at the agency, if they'd had any integrity whatsoever, they would have resigned.
Yes.
In protest. But the bureaucracy works in such a way that, oh, I'm not going to lose that pension. I'm not going to lose that next promotion. So, that's the mentality anymore.
And I'm glad you said this last point, Michael, because of the fact that you reminded me, in the decades that we're talking about, there's been an opportunity for people like Brennan and Comey and Clapper to recruit and embed within the layers of these organizations they're like-minded individuals. That goes back to what you said a couple of minutes ago about how deep those layers may be within these agencies, and very, very difficult to ferret out. Michael?
Absolutely, and they have an entire political party behind them.
Yes.
You know, all three of these guys, Clapper, Comey, and Brennan, lied to Congress.
Yes.
They sat there and told bald-faced lies.
Yes.
They lied to the American public in television appearances.
Yes.
And I've not seen any retribution whatsoever against them so far.
No.
I guess the only retribution we can expect is a public shaming of them for their actions, which are now coming to light, and they're now proven beyond a shadow of a doubt.
But
I don't see how anyone can believe that there was collusion between Donald Trump and Russian intelligence. It's ridiculous, and it's been ridiculous from the start, and everyone I know thought it was ridiculous from the start, except apparently the leaders of our intelligence community.
But to your point, no matter how much evidence there is today, people are going to say, "Oh, this CIA director John Ratcliffe, he's Trump's boy. Of course he's going to say this." They're not going to believe it. It is unbelievable, just like your conversation with the fellow in the cigar store. So let's get a quick break in, Michael, if you can. It is 8:16. Michael R. Davidson, michaelrdavidson.com. Back in a moment with me on The Beacon.
It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
8:20 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon on this very hot, steamy Tuesday. Back to my conversation with Michael R. Davidson, and I hope it's a little cooler there in the Shenandoah Valley, Michael.
Not really.
No, huh?
The 90s and thunderstorms. That's what we're in right now.
That's what we're looking at here as well, with a chance of heavy downpours later, with a punch of that localized flooding. I'm intrigued by what you said. Let me just jump back in, Michael. I'm intrigued by what you said about the 1990s and you opting to leave the CIA because of the change in culture that you were seeing. Because I trace much of what I see happening here back to the psyops that actually were being run against the American public, beginning with the Clinton administration. And I think I said this earlier this morning, I see a hard beginning here. There are many of them. But James Carville and Paul Begala about it's the economy, stupid, the worst economy in 50 years, the vast right-wing conspiracy, the programming of Americans to divide and conquer and hate. I trace much of it back to the coarsening of our American culture right there in that administration.
Oh, I there's no doubt. There's no doubt about it, Tom. You're absolutely correct. I mean, that's when it began. And we can't forget who Hillary Clinton wrote her thesis on. I believe it was what was his name, Tom?
Of course, I just drew a blank on it. I know you're talking about from Chicago. Rules for Radicals. Alinsky's Rules for Radicals.
Saul Alinsky. That's it. Yeah. Exactly. And there you see it. I mean, you see. This undercurrent has been in existence in the United States for years,
yes,
since at least the 60s.
Yes.
And it has managed to grow through academe. We've seen our institutions of higher learning basically taken over by the left and now the radical left. And this idea that America is bad, that all of our founding fathers were horrible slave owners and terrible people.
Yep.
And it may, as you say, it's like a psyop. I mean, the idea is to undermine this country.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, I think, to undermine Western civilization.
Absolutely.
Upon which we're based. I mean, the open avowal now of undermining Western civilization, I think, sort of proves your point.
And when we come into the Obama-Biden administration and we look at who his mentors were, they are the 60s, radical left. Absolutely. Oh, no, that's not true. Yeah, it is. Bill Ayers, Bernadette Dorn.
Well, his mentor out in Hawaii was a well-known communist.
Yeah, Frank Marshall, I think it was?
Frank Marshall, yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, and what they've done, they've come from being an sort of an underground movement.
Yes.
A concealed movement, and they're now moving into the open with no consequences whatsoever.
No, and captured the media. They captured the media in the 1990s to control the messaging. I mean, this is all played out in real time, and people, it was so scientifically mastered over 30, 35, 40 years and longer that people didn't even know. So I have a question for you related to what's going on in the Middle East with the attacking Iran's nuclear program with Israel, the Mossad. I'm looking at the cover of your book, By Another Day, Michael R. Davidson, Mossad Pursues Israel's Enemies. Your thoughts about Middle East activities that I just alluded to.
Well, I think it's remarkable what the president has done in the Middle East. No one would have believed that within a matter of days he could end the war between India and Pakistan. He could basically destroy Iran's capacity to build a nuclear weapon. And now he's bringing about a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. You look at the fact that the Israelis have decimated both Hezbollah and Hamas, that Iran is now, or should be for the foreseeable future, unable to foot the bill for radical terrorism in the Middle East and throughout the world, I might add. And you see the movement, I think, towards something like the Abraham Accords in the Middle East. He could bring about peace in the Middle East. And it's a remarkable achievement. I just heard Netanyahu say this morning that he's nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize,
yes,
which he should get, actually. Certainly, he deserves it much more than Barack Obama, who did absolutely nothing,
yes,
other than be black to win the Peace Prize.
It's just unbelievable. Of course, Robbie had said earlier he can only imagine that the number of people are going to be, you know, outraged over anybody considering Donald Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize.
But these people, Tom, get outraged over anything.
Yes.
Anything. It, no matter how petty, how small it is, they'll try to make a political thing out of it, and they'll feign outrage. They'll take to the streets with their paid mobs. And now it's progressed to the point where they're actually shooting at people. So I think we're coming up on a pretty dangerous point in our history, Tom.
Oh, I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that. You said something a couple of minutes ago about the, you know, folks getting into these intelligence agencies and talking about Brennan, you know, failing the test to be a field ops person, I think you said.
Yes.
And I just always wonder back, and I mentioned this to you a couple times over all of the years, Michael Davidson, that back when I was in, you know, Fort Dix, New Jersey, and we were there in the, the reception center for, I don't know, 3 days, 4 days, whatever the heck it was, and went through all those batteries of psychological testing and I always wonder back, what was it in my testing that they came to me from the Army Security Agency, you know, trying to actively recruit me into the service? And this was just a few short years after you had entered it. And I just wonder what the heck was in those tests that would have, put me on their radar screen.
Well, like me, Tom, I assume it's because you're incredibly handsome.
yeah, that must be it. No question about it.
but I don't know how that works. I mean, when I joined ASA,
yeah,
for a 4-year enlistment,
yeah,
and was lucky enough to do fairly well on the Army Language Aptitude Test to get sent out to Monterey to study Russian.
Yeah.
So it's. I think you have to be fairly high on the intelligence quotient to be recruited into those particular services.
And I wonder, too, I mean, if they ever would have gone to the extent of, you know, looked at my school records, because in 61, 62, 63, 64, I was in, I think, some of the very first Russian language classes that were given in the state of New York. And whether they would have ever had a way to correlate that, I have no idea, no way of knowing.
Well, you've got to remember, Russian was the language to have.
Absolutely.
At that time. And if you had a smattering of it, both you and I had it, I think, in college, before the military. That, I'm certain, would tip the scales in your favor to get into an organization like the Army Security Agency.
Exactly. So, Michael, we're up against the hard break. Let you drop off at this point in time. But if you're up for it, I'd love to have these conversations with you with a great deal of frequency, you know, over the near future, because I think we are in really, really difficult, dangerous times, as you just said.
Well, I do too, and happy to talk to you anytime, Tom. Hopefully we won't bore your audience too much with me.
Nope. Thanks, Michael. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Michael R. Davidson, michaelrdavidson.com. Please take a look at his website. Look at the numbers of books that he has authored, given, you know, based historical fictions, based on his years of involvement in the CIA. Back in a minute on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon.